live. And when I say live, it's like a presidential candidate saying, trust me. It's the Mike Novak Show. Forest green, pea green, sea green, olive green, blue green, and pretty much any shade of green you can find in a box of Crayolas. But I don't color inside the lines. Hey, here's that guy with his song.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
Yes, indeed, they are. And actually, that's kind of what I'm going to talk about on today's show. Welcome to the program. I'm so glad you're here. And you should know, let me just start right off, because I always need to mention this, that anytime you want more information about anything you hear on this program, regardless of where you hear it, and that could be Stitcher, and it could be Spreaker, and it could be iTunes, and it could be SoundCloud, it could be GDGDRadio.com, or it could be my very own website, MikeNovak.net, and that's MikeNowak.net. And there's another good reason to go to that place, my website, because every time I do one of these programs, I also do a blog. It's This Week's Show. And some folks would call it a blog, but it's about the program, and you get to get a little more detail about things I'm talking about on the show. There are certainly links and more information, sometimes photos. So it's a good place to get more and follow through on things I talk about if they interest you. And you can do it as you're listening to the program. Wow, technology, run wild. On today's program, by the way, in Chicago, now I'm based in Chicago, and some of you might not care about it, and others might go, ew, what are you doing there? I don't know. I live here. And just recently, the city of Chicago, in its infinite wisdom, instituted a plastic bag ban. And we're going to see how that works. It's not my favorite thing in the world here because I don't think they did it right. But who am I? I was just president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition for 6 years, but what do I know? And we'll see how it goes. But the part of the problem with that plastic bag ban that they instituted is that it doesn't ban all plastic bags. For instance, a lot of the stores are getting around it right now by making plastic bags that are slightly thicker than the ones that got banned, so they get around the law that way. Also, the city of Chicago, as I said, in its infinite wisdom, did not decide to assess a fee for a bag you take out of the store. So if a store wants to give you a paper bag for free, you can get it. Guess what people are going to do? They're going to take paper bags for free. And all over the country, and you might be in one of those municipalities or states even that have instituted plastic bag laws, the carrot and stick approach usually works. The stick being, if you want a bag to take out of the store, you got to pay for it. They didn't do that here. Although they said, stores are free to institute some sort of fee if they want, but see, then it just makes it chaos. Anyway, that got instituted this week, and we'll see how that goes. Check back with me in about a year, okay? Maybe 6 months, maybe a month when everybody's complaining. I don't know. On the show today, we prove that everything's connected, because sometimes I talk about gardening issues, and sometimes I talk about environmental issues, and what I find is the two are very close to each other. They are in lockstep. And we start with a woman who I worked with, speaking of laws, on another ordinance that just got passed by the city of Chicago, and I actually had a hand in this. No need to pat me on the back. I was a small part of it, but happy to do whatever I could. And that is a composting law. The state of Illinois has not exactly been really in the forefront of that up until several years ago. It might as well have been nuclear waste as food waste. But now we're becoming a little more enlightened and trying to help folks figure out how to recycle their food scraps, which is to say compost them, and yard waste and that sort of thing. And the city of Chicago has gotten on board and made it easier for community gardens and urban farms to compost, which is a good thing. And I'll talk to Laura Lynn Clausen from Growing Power. It started in Milwaukee with Will Allen, who, you know, won a genius grant from the MacArthur Foundation for Growing Power there, and it has spread to Chicago, and there's a version of it here in the city. So we'll talk to Laura Lynn Clausen about that, because she and I worked together to help make this law a reality. And then we're going to talk about clean water, and again, it's somewhat related to gardening because it's about nutrients. You might not know this, but a lot of the nutrients you put in your yard, in your garden, in the soil, end up in lakes and rivers, and they end up in oceans and seas, and they create dead zones, mainly because of nitrogen and phosphorus, and that has to stop. So I will be talking to Cindy Skruckrud, actually Dr. Cindy Skruckrud, who is a clean water advocate for the Sierra Club Illinois chapter, about this issue and how they're addressing it in Illinois, and it's a really, really good thing. That's the show today. I hope you go to MikeNovak.net if you need any more information. And meanwhile, we'll get right to the proceedings after this.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakenings Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
I'm very excited today about compost. Who wouldn't be? And somebody else who's very excited today about compost, at least I think so, is Laura Lynn Clausen, who's the youth program manager for Chicago Growing Power. But she's also a member of the Chicago Food Policy Action Council. Those two kind of work together, and we'll explain that in a second. But the reason we're both excited, and this may seem strange, one thing you should know, Lauren Lynn, and by the way, hi and welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show.
Yes, no problem. Pleasure to be here.
You and I are excited about compost in Chicago, and people listen to this show in other parts of the country, and they might be scratching their heads and saying, yeah, so? And I think that has to do with the fact that in Chicago, we've not been as forward-looking as we might have been for a long time. But now, in Chicago and in Illinois, we're catching up with that. We have begun to understand that when you take your food scraps and when you take your yard waste and other organic materials and you compost them, you create the best stuff you can put in a garden. And especially in an urban area like this, this is exactly what you need to grow, isn't it?
It is, yeah, especially to grow at the quantity that we need to feed a city.
Yeah, okay, and that's a really good place to start. So you're with Growing Power. Explain a little bit about Growing Power and what you're doing in Chicago.
So Growing Power is a nonprofit that was started in Milwaukee and brought to Chicago by Erica Allen in 2001. So here in Chicago, we have 7 different farms spread throughout the city. We're farming a total of 13 acres in partnership with Park District, in partnership with the Chicago Housing Authority, and then at our main headquarters in Bridgeport, which is our Iron Street Farm.
Which is not a small deal there. You've got 7 acres, and it was that a brownfield when you first started?
It was a former trucking depot, from what we know. I believe it had something to do with the recycling industry in general. We're right next to Acme Recycling.
Okay.
And so at all of our farms throughout the city, we always start with compost that we've grown in our operations. Mm-hmm. So, as you know, a lot of soil in the city is toxic or contaminated, so even though grass may be growing, you never know necessarily what was underneath.
That's
and
true.
And if a building was imploded and all the building material, anything that was found within that site will be within the soil as well. Well, we were fortunate because we have our headquarters in Milwaukee where the composting legislation and policy in general is much less restrictive than what we have here in Illinois. So a huge part of us being able to expand the way that we have is because we have that site and that source for compost to grow.
Mm-hmm. And I should say what has changed in Chicago, and I've got this, you know, cheat sheet, and it goes on at some length, and mm-hmm. I know about it because you and I sat across tables over the years. Me, not so much. I know you were a real key cog in getting this legislation, this ordinance passed in Chicago. But you and I know each other mostly from that. I haven't even come out to see your operation at Iron Street Farm, which is next on my list of things to do.
Yes, you should come. It's one of the very few commercial compost facilities in all of Chicago.
Exactly. But now it's smaller farms, community farms will be able to do that. So, for instance, you got somebody who lives on a block and there's a community farm at the end of the block and they don't have a compost pile in their yard and they would love to put food scraps in there. And, of course, we're talking about the stuff that's not meat and not dairy, but vegetation generally. They can take it down the block and have it composted as long as that operation has registered with the city. And, you know, depending on the size, they might have to, if they're doing food scraps and accepting from off-site, they're going to have to pay a small fee, like $300 for 3 years. But that's really pretty reasonable to get this whole thing rolling, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we wanted to see from the get-go. So we went through the entire process to fill out this commercial compost facility permit. And from the state of Illinois' perspective, in order to do that, you're essentially regulated and filling out an application similar to a waste management facility. So it's almost like you're trying to open a landfill. So it takes a lot and a lot of resources to be able to do that. And having gone through that process, we wanted to make sure that it was much easier for other people to start smaller community-based community compost operations. And on the other side, for urban farms within the city, to not have to be regulated in quite the same way as, say, a huge, you know, landfill, something like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking to Laurelyn Clausen from Growing Power Chicago, and you mentioned to me earlier that all of you do a lot of different jobs there. It's like everybody learns about everything on site there. So let's explain to folks who don't understand the importance of composting. And it's hard to imagine a gardener who does not, but people who don't garden might not get it. What is so important about reducing yard waste and food scraps to back to soil?
Well, I think it's part of the recycling process. So rather than having all of that organic matter go into a landfill, you can turn it into a resource that can be used to grow food. So your plants and your fruits and your vegetables are only going to be as healthy as the soil that they're grown in. So if you have poor soil, you won't have a huge volume coming from your farm. Any contaminants that may be in the soil will be taken up through the plant as well. So having that really kind of high fertility and nutrient-dense compost allows you to grow your food more densely, and so you can grow more in small spaces, which I really think is key for urban farming.
It's also a better way of sucking up some of that carbon that's going to try to make its way back into the atmosphere, rather than if we toss this stuff into landfills, not only do we release carbon dioxide in great quantities, but methane. We inadvertently create methane as well, and many people know that the estimate is 20 or 27 times the potency of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So that's another reason to create compost. Now, do you got any tips for folks who want to do this in their backyard and say they haven't been that successful with composting? What do you think they're doing wrong?
I think a lot of the composting process and when it goes unsuccessful is when you don't have the correct balance of carbon and nitrogen ratios, which is part of what this amendment changed. So previously, as you mentioned before, all composting had to be done on site. So you were only able to compost materials you produced on site. All your finished product had to be used on site, which for a lot of backyard gardeners or schools or community gardens, you may produce more nitrogen than carbon, or you may not have enough food scraps to really fill in the nitrogen piece, and you may just have more of the carbons or the landscape waste or the wood chips. And so having a balanced pile is what helps to ensure you have that fertility within your soil and that your process is going smoothly.
What do you consider a balanced pile?
So it's a combo of nitrogen and carbon. Ours, when we build ours, is visually about 50% nitrogen, 50% carbon. But obviously nitrogen has a lot of water weight, so that gets broken down. So the balanced, you know, if you don't have enough wood chips to cover all your food scraps, then your food scraps, as they break down, you're going to have a smell. If you only have carbons and you're just breaking down, you know, brown leaves or wood chips, they'll eventually break down into what appears as soil, but it won't have that same nutrient density as if you've introduced food scraps and other vegetable matter into your pile.
And folks also need to be aware that there's got to be some moisture in there. I'm sure a lot of folks don't think about that. And also about oxygen. Oxygen also needs to get into your compost pile. How often do you turn the piles out at the growing power?
We actually do not turn our piles at our Iron Street farm. So we were approved through the state to do sort of static compost piles, so there is clearly still oxygen in there, but by reducing turning it, then it kind of lessens the amount of smell that may be exposed when you open up a compost pile, and we're very, very close to a residential district, so we want to be respectful of neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are unable to aerate it or turn it, it will take a bit longer to break down. That aeration really helps for your compost pile to heat up and break everything down more quickly.
I think you point out an important thing, and it's a lesson I've learned over the years, which is when you put your yard waste and your food scraps in the pile in your backyard, eventually it's going to break down.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to turn into compost. It's just a matter of how quickly, and as you said, you can do it without turning the pile. How do you think this new law is going to change what you guys do at the Iron Street Farm?
I think at Iron Street, since we do have that commercial compost facility permit, it won't necessarily change a lot of what we are doing at this specific site, because we are permitted to take material from off-site. We are permitted to sell.
Right.
I think where it will help a lot is with our community gardens or our farms that are located within community spaces. So we'll be able to legally accept food scraps from community members, from the youth that work on our farm. It's an opportunity to create other economic development opportunities as well. So our youth can start, you know, community compost businesses where they're biking around and collecting compost from neighbors and bringing it to their farm. So it's really a way that you can start to shift economics at the community-based level throughout the city.
Yeah, one of the things we should point out is that you can't charge to have the material dropped off. So there's no tipping fee for the stuff coming into your compost. But if you get a license for it, and you can actually charge for your compost product once you create it, which, as you said, might prove beneficial to some operations in some neighborhoods. I want to give you a chance to plug the youth program and what you've been working on. I know you were doing stuff today before I talked to you. Tell me a little bit about the youth program.
So this summer we have, I want to say about 250 high schoolers working at our farms spread throughout the city. So in partnership with both After School Matters and the Chicago Housing Authority. So teens come out between 16 and 20 hours a week, and they learn all aspects about our farming operations. So they do a lot of hands-on farming and harvesting and watering and composting and all of those practices that you need to be able to run and manage a successful farm. And then in addition to that, we do several different workshops that focus on like added value products and microenterprise development. We do culinary lessons. We do food justice and dismantling racism lessons and workshops as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we do several science, you know, inquiry-based science projects with the crew.
And I assume you grow a few things, too.
Yes, we grow a lot.
What's looking really good right now?
We have tons of edible flowers, lots of greens, so kale, collards, lettuces, mustards. We have zucchini coming. We have tomatoes, anything you can find at a market. So we do the Green City Market in Lincoln Park every Wednesday and Saturday, and then also the 61st Street Market in Woodlawn. And we're very excited for the Fresh Moves bus to be launched within the next week as well. So that'll be a mobile produce bus that's making 22 stops across the city, primarily on the south and the west side, to be another outlet for selling fresh fruits and vegetables, and also for communities to have access to fresh fruits and vegetables.
Well, that sounds great. And folks who want to find out more information about this can go to growingpower.org. On the homepage, there's a drop-down box under Farms, and just look for Chicago Farms. You can also see the Milwaukee Farms, the Madison Farms, Vertical Farm, and you can find out more about Growing Power. And for those who are in the Chicago area and they want to know more about this new law, I know there's going to be information up at Advocates for Urban Agriculture, which is auachicago.org. So folks who are interested in following through on this, because we can't possibly explain everything in 15 minutes here, but it's very exciting, and I want to congratulate you, Laura Lynn, and the other folks who worked hard for a number of years to get this passed. This is quite a victory for urban farming in Chicago, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
You might not know it, but I write a column for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. And if you say, what's that got to do with me? It would be a good question. And the answer is that Chicagoland Gardening is just one of a number of great gardening magazines produced by State Gardening. They're the folks who write my checks. And they're the folks who publish magazines in 21 states, from Minnesota to Florida, from Pennsylvania to Oklahoma. That means that you can subscribe to Kentucky Gardener, but depending on what side of the river you're on, you might want a subscription to Indiana Gardener, or Ohio Gardener, or Tennessee Gardener, or Louisiana Gardener. I think maybe you're getting the picture. Wherever you live in the Midwest or the South, State by State Gardening has a magazine for you. And they feature articles by some of the leading garden experts in each state, including famous authors, nursery owners, state extension agents, master gardeners, and even me. Subscribe today by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
We're sailing in a strange boat, heading for a strange shore. We're sailing in a strange boat, heading for a strange shore. Carrying the strangest cargo that was ever hauled aboard.
I've received an email the other week, and it was an announcement that said, Illinois announces agreement to clean up nutrient pollution. And I thought, well, that's cool. Sierra Club welcomes new strategy for addressing Illinois' most widespread water quality problem. Now, what do you think the most widespread water quality problem is? And I'm guessing, Cindy Skrookroot, that most people don't know what that is and would guess wrong, because I don't think they're, what do you think they would guess it is, or is that just are you too far into this, Cindy, that you couldn't even imagine that?
That's a good question. What do I think people might think is the most,
you know what I think they would say?
Yeah, what would you think?
Pesticides. I think they would go down the pesticide road, or I think they would go down to industrial effluent, something like that. But what they wouldn't realize is that one of the major problems we have with our water quality is the stuff we're putting on our plants.
Yep.
To fertilize them and to make them grow, and that stuff runs off into our waterways and it goes down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico, as the song says, where it forms into something that is called a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. And that's a place where nothing can survive. And I'm going to get into dead zones in a second, but basically it's nutrients, right?
Yep, it's nutrients. And, you know, this Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy that was released last week is a big deal, because we, environmental groups like Sierra Club, we worked on this strategy together with agricultural interests, together with folks who run wastewater treatment plants. We worked with the Illinois EPA, the Illinois Department of Agriculture. So having all those entities agree that nutrient pollution is a big problem in Illinois and that we're going to do something about it, that's a big deal. That's a big step in the right direction.
It is. And let me say something at the outset here, and I've mentioned this in other interviews with folks, because my show is heard all over the place in other parts of the country. This is not unique to Illinois, what's going on here. For instance, the Mississippi River watershed covers how many states? I don't exactly remember.
12 states.
All right, so all you folks there, and then there's the Missouri, and then there's the Ohio, and then there's the stuff west of the Rockies, and the stuff east of the Appalachians. I mean, look at Chesapeake Bay. That's a mess.
Yep. And we've had problems with, you know, nutrient pollution causing big algae blooms in Lake Erie
yep.
in recent years. So it's a big issue for Great Lakes states. But this, you know, this strategy that was developed in Illinois was an outgrowth of a call from the US EPA back in 2008, which is called the Gulf Hypoxia Action Plan. That dead zone in the Gulf that you're talking about, scientifically we call that the hypoxic zone, where because we've overfed all these things by all these nutrients that are coming down the Mississippi River, we end up with a zone in the Gulf of Mexico where oxygen levels are way too low to support life there.
I think
that's what hypoxia means.
Lack of oxygen. Yeah, hypoxia, lack of oxygen. And I need to be playing Rod Serling's music here, right? The hypoxia zone.
Right, exactly.
But you know, okay, let me talk about that for a second, because we could be patting ourselves on the back as Americans and saying, we're number one, we're number one, we've got a hypoxia zone. But the point is, there are more than 400 dead zones in oceans and seas all over the planet. We're not the only ones who do this. This is done with great regularity all across the planet, which is to say, we put these nutrients in the ground, they wash into our rivers, and then they wash out to sea, and then we have these algae blooms. And maybe you can explain something to me, because I've been a little bit confused by this for years. I know that the algae blooms are behind it. I thought I knew at one point that what really sucks up the oxygen is not the algae so much, but the death of the algae as it decomposes. Is it the actual living algae that suck up the oxygen?
It's both. It's both. It's the living living algae that are during the day. It's great. They're photosynthesizing like other green plants, and they're putting oxygen into the water. But when you have an algae bloom in the Gulf of Mexico, or even in your local lake or stream, at night, when the sun goes down, when the lights go off, that algae has to start respiring just like us. And when you have an overgrowth of it, it can just suck out all the oxygen in the water and lead to fish kills and other things. So,
yeah, we can't.
But it's also when you kind of fuel that overgrowth of plants and other organisms in the water, and as they die, the things that decompose them have to also use up oxygen, and so that plays a part in it. If you want to get really sciencey about it.
Well, Mike. I do actually. It's actually kind of a double whammy, isn't it?
Yep.
You've got too many organisms using up the oxygen, and then as they overpopulate, and of course they're going to die when you have decomposition, oxygen is involved, and that can get sucked up that way. So basically you have this water that cannot sustain life of any kind. And as I said, we have it all over the place. The Gulf of Mexico is a particular problem because of the size of the Mississippi and the farms we have here in the Midwest and the lawns we have here in the Midwest. And what else is added to that nutrient overload?
So that's some analysis that was done as part of developing this strategy. So every state in the Mississippi River Basin is being asked to reduce the export of nitrogen and phosphorus from their state by half, by 45%,
so
roughly half. But we did an analysis, so what is the source of the nitrogen and phosphorus leaving the state of Illinois? It's for phosphorus, roughly half of it comes from agricultural runoff. The other half comes from phosphorus in our treated wastewater that we discharge to rivers and send down to the Gulf of Mexico. For nitrogen, it's about 80% of the nitrogen is from agricultural sources. About the remaining 18-20% is from sewage treatment plants. Urban runoff is relatively a small contributor to the overall nitrogen and phosphorus that leave the state of Illinois, but the runoff from your lawns can be a big contributor to problems in your local stream. So this is an issue that we're, even though we're saying, hey, these are the biggest contributors, we want to tackle reductions in nutrient inputs to our waterways on all three fronts, reducing them from farmland, reducing it from wastewater treatment plant outputs, and reducing it from the runoff that runs off our lawns and streets.
That's Cindy Skrukrud. Actually, I realized Dr. Cindy Skrukrud, and now I'm embarrassed because all these years I've just been calling you Cindy.
That's okay.
Dr.
I don't go around saying, you need to call me Dr. Skrukrud.
You know, some people do, though.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you're one of those who doesn't. So, and we'll get back to these sources of nitrogen and phosphorus in a second. Was the Sierra Club, Illinois Sierra Club, part of the process here? I note that you talked to farmers, local governments, businesses, boaters. Where's the nitrogen and phosphorus coming from with boaters?
Well, I think more boaters. Boaters are a concern. You know, boaters are people who are concerned about the quality.
Oh, I see. So it's not that they're doing it; it's that these are people who suffer when these blooms happen.
Yeah,
in Lake Erie. I mean, if you've seen the photos in the last couple of years, it's terrifying. And what's sad is we thought we had beaten that back in the 1970s; that we had cleaned up our lakes, and especially the Great Lakes. That was supposed to be one of the great success stories in the, you know, in the 60s. We you know, hit rock bottom,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah.
And then as we were very aggressive about cleaning up those lakes, and it happened. And now here we are going back. Why did that happen?
Well, you know, as you said earlier, Mike, that folks might think industrial pollution is the biggest, you know, one of the biggest contributors to pollution in our waterways. But when, you know, when the Clean Water Act, it's now, what, 45 years ago? When
mm-hmm.
the 45 years ago, when the Clean Water Act went into effect, one of the first things it did was really clean up rampant pollution from industrial sources. And we greatly improved our treatment of wastewater from our communities. But we didn't, you know, we didn't look, at that time we had, you know, other things that seemed to be the most compelling problems. But now it's really gotten to the point where we are now saying, we need to look at the nutrients in our wastewater. We need to look at the runoff from our agricultural lands and from our lawn. So it's, you know, this issue is now risen to the top of the heap, and it's the critical one that we need to be working on.
It's kind of like Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction, where she comes out of the bathtub because we thought this issue was dead, and it raises its ugly head once again, and here we are dealing with the algae blooms all over again, when we thought we had this solved. And it sounds like, and I've read a little bit about this, that part of what's happened here is it's coming from slightly different sources than it was 45 years ago. The sources have changed, and it's harder to pinpoint, from what I understand. The what we call non-point sources are contributing mightily to what's going into the lakes and streams. Is that right?
Yeah. So what we would call non-point sources would be both that runoff from urban areas and the runoff from agricultural fields. And so, you know, definitely that's contributing about half the phosphorus in our waterways and, you know, 80% of the nitrate and nitrogen that we're measuring in our waterways.
Is the non-point sources.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I wasn't sure this was going to happen, but I'm really enjoying the conversation. Let's take a short break. When we come back, finish with Dr. Cindy, and we do use the word doctor here, Dr. Cindy Skrukrud, who's clean water advocate for the Sierra Club Illinois chapter. Just a little more information before I let you go, because I know you're on another deadline, and we'll do it right after this.
Okay.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Killer asparagus was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
And so am I.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Raven Gosplach, my favorite holiday dish.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Data, options?
It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener.
I prefer my asparagus with a side of patak.
Mr. Wolf, are you joking?
Actually, Captain, I believe he is choking.
You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment, even in the heat of summer, using an organic slow-release formula like Milorganite. Feeds your lawn for up to 12 weeks. You can apply less fertilizer and still enjoy fantastic and long-lasting results by following the application rates found at Milorganite.com. Milorganite also adds organic material to the soil and helps conserve water, especially helpful in areas with water restrictions. Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com, MILORGANITE.com, to find a garden center near you.
Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Back with Dr. Cindy Skrukrud, clean water advocate for the Sierra Club Illinois chapter. We're talking about the agreement that Illinois just announced to clean up nutrient pollution. And as we mentioned earlier, what we're talking about, no, folks, it's not the pesticides. You know, Cindy, when I go to garden clubs and I talk about why we have a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, folks tend to think it's the pesticides. We use too many pesticides, and I point out to them, no, it's nutrients. It's that we've got too many, and part of that is also silt, because silt is really nutrient rich. That stuff flows, and we used to let that silt flow out into the cypress swamps in places like Louisiana, and then we built these levees. And we just channel that stuff straight out to the Gulf of Mexico, like in a pipe, you know. And so the nitrogen and the phosphorus and the silt and all the nutrients in there are all just being channeled out. It's kind of what has built up the delta there, but it's also contributing to the dead zone.
And I think, you know, I mean, I think this, you know, one of the important things to think about here is, you know, nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus, they're absolutely essential for animal and plant life. They're major nutrients. So if we want to grow crop, you know, tomatoes, corn, whatever, we need to have that type of fertility in our soil so that we can have healthy crops and healthy food sources. But nobody, not a gardener, not a farmer, wants to be paying to put good fertilizer on their crops and then have it run off. So, you know, while this is a problem that's been going on for a while, it makes a lot of economic sense, too, to be putting in best management practices on our fields so that those nutrients stay where we want them. There's a effort underway in Illinois that's part of this whole implementation of this strategy called Keep It for the Crops. The idea that, yeah, we need to fertilize our crops to get them to grow, but we want that fertilizer to stay on the land, go into the crops, not run off into our rivers and lakes that naturally wouldn't see that high level of fertilization.
You know, I'm reading this book right now. As a matter of fact, I was just reading it today. It's called The Soil Will Save Us. Are you familiar with that?
No, I haven't read that.
By a woman named Kristin Olson, O-H-L-S-O-N. K-R-I-S-T-I-N is Kristin, O-H-L-S-O-N. And she goes on at length about tilling and, you know, the idea that we would till these soils and we would destroy the natural biology of them, which helps plants grow. And because we destroy the natural biology, well, then we got to prop up the plants with synthetic fertilizer. And the problem is that when the fertilizer's not working, we add more fertilizer. And she estimates that in some cases, they're using 50% more fertilizer than they really need sometimes. And I know farmers would argue, no, we can't do that because we'd never stay in business. And yet the argument she's making in this is that we have mistreated our soil so badly by propping it up with synthetics that this is a logical outcome of what we've done. Phosphorus is another interesting problem because when I got into the gardening world, you know, 20 years ago, if you wanted a bloom, you got to add phosphorus, they told you. And if you really want lots of phosphorus, get that superphosphate in there. And now there are laws against adding phosphorus. For instance, in Illinois, where we are, if you're a professional lawn care company, you cannot add phosphorus to the soil unless the soil test tells you that it's absolutely needed. And in many cases, we're discovering that phosphorus persists in the soil a lot longer than we thought. Have I got anything wrong about that?
Nope, that's exactly right. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes we just have this natural tendency. It's like, well, if some is good, more is better.
It's the American way.
Yeah, but, you know, definitely we passed this law a few years back that says if you're a for-hire lawn care company, you cannot use lawn fertilizer that has phosphorus in it. And the basis for that is the soil scientists said we have plenty enough phosphorus in soils in Illinois to grow healthy turf grass. We don't need to put more phosphorus.
And yet 15 years prior to that, they were saying, oh yeah, all plants need phosphorus, especially if you want to bloom. You know, so it's amazing how fast that conventional wisdom could change. Okay, now, but you brought up something, and again, I'm talking to Cindy Skrukrud from the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. She's the clean water advocate, and this is about the agreement to clean up nutrient pollution. You were mentioning that some of the phosphorus, or a lot of it, comes from water treatment. It seems to me we need water treatment. Can we isolate the phosphorus? Can we hang on to it as we dump this water back into the system?
We can. And that we are starting to see more and more wastewater treatment plants in Illinois include steps in their process that would capture the phosphorus. We need, you know, not all of them are doing it yet. That's one of the things is we need more of the plants to add that technology. We need them to be getting the phosphorus that they discharge to rivers and streams low enough that they aren't causing algae overgrowth in that receiving water. So we not only need to reduce phosphorus from wastewater plants to address the problems down in the Gulf of Mexico, we really need to reduce it so we can eliminate algae blooms within lakes and rivers within the state of Illinois and restore the oxygen levels in those waterways to what's needed for the fish and other animals that live in those waters to be able to thrive. And, you know, this is not something that comes free. It certainly is going to be a cost to wastewater treatment plants to add these controls, but that's where we really need people in towns, ratepayers, to really tell their public officials that it's important that the stream where you live, if you live on the Chicago River, you live on the Fox River, you live on the DuPage River, you live on the Rock River, that you want a stream that's free of algae and you think it's important and you're willing to pay to help take that phosphorus out of your wastewater discharge.
So you're saying that the technology exists for this and that we just need to upgrade, and of course that's going to be reflected in your taxes, and that's where people get all bent out of shape. And, you know, my feeling is, well, wait a second, dudes and dudettes, you've already gotten the benefits of all of this stuff, the water that's so cheap, it's ridiculous. You got to put something back. And this is the price you pay, not to live in a free society, but to live in a clean society. That's the price you pay. Now, you know, me, I think it's just because I'm getting old and cranky, but I would hope that other people agree with me, and it sounds like it's a pretty good idea for them to start thinking that way.
Yeah, and really to be, you know, and to speak out and be supportive. And as we implement this strategy that's now been released, this is certainly going to be discussion in community after community. How are we going to pay to improve our wastewater treatment? And that's where we really need people who care about clean rivers and lakes to be speaking up. And there's a lot of people out there. I mean, think how many people are anglers who are out fishing in our rivers and lakes. Think about how many people, now that you can get a nice, pretty cheap and easy to maneuver kayak, people who are out, you know, kayaking out on the Chicago River, for goodness sakes, you know, those people who are out on the water, they want to be out on clean water. So those are all the people who need to be telling their community leaders that it's important that we remove phosphorus from our wastewater discharges to help clean up our waterways.
All right. So what happens here? Are you meeting with municipalities, with people? How will this be enacted? How will this be enforced?
So, yeah, good question. So, you know, I served on the policy working group that helped develop this strategy, and we met for probably a year, 18 months to hammer out the strategy. We haven't met for about a year now, just while it was being finalized. It had to go out on public notice, and it had to, you know, all the editors had to edit stuff, but now that the strategy is out, we're actually meeting next week, and we are sitting down and saying, okay, how are we going to make this happen? We're going to be talking about our implementation steps. We're going to talk about what are our benchmarks, how, you know, every 5 years, how much progress do we think we should be making so we can get to this goal to reduce our export of nitrogen and phosphorus from the state, to reduce that by half. And then we have to get phosphorus levels even lower to curtail algae blooms in lakes and rivers within the state. So we're going to be, you know, working together to kind of push the strategy forward in the state. But it's definitely work that's going to have to be done community by community, watershed by watershed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I'm here. I want to help pave the way. I want people to know about this. I mean, if we don't have clean water, we have nothing. It's interesting that we seem to be in a time of continual crisis over the environment, and everybody has to find their own particular area that they're interested in and work for it. And that's why I'm glad you're out there. If folks want to get more information about this, can they go to the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club website?
Yeah, definitely. And we've actually got a what we call a Water Sentinels page on our website. Those are our Sierra Club volunteers who are working on water, clean water issues. And if you go to the Water Sentinels page of our website, my email's listed there, and just shoot me an email. I think my phone number might be there too, but no, that's the best way to get a hold of me.
And you've got a brand new Sierra Club Illinois website, and it's illinois.sierraclub.org. And what was the page you want them to go to?
The page is called Water Sentinels, S-E-N-T-I-N-E-L-S. So like guard, so, you know, Sierra Club members who are keeping their eye out in Illinois. And if you go to that page, there's a link to scroll down to the bottom. There's a link to my email and my phone number at the Sierra Club chapter. I also work with a woman, Katrina Phillips, who's our clean water organizer, and her contact information is there, as well as Fran Caffey, who is the volunteer lead for our Water Sentinels program.
And just so folks know, when they go to the homepage, illinois.sierraclub.org, scroll all the way down to the bottom. In the center, it says water, and the very last title there is Water Sentinels, and then you click on that and you can find all that other information. And one more thing I will say is that you can also find it at mikenowak.net, M-I-K-E-N-O-W-A-K.net. I always write about my conversations with various people like Dr. Cindy Skrukrut, and I will have those links there too if you find that easier. Cindy, thank you so much. This is such a good thing. We need to clean up our water, and I'm glad that you guys are working on it, and I'm sure we'll talk again very soon.
Thanks, Mike. I so appreciate your interest in this issue too, so really, really appreciate the chance to talk to you about it.
That's today's show. All I've got to say is go green or go home. You can find more information about The Mike Novak Show at mikenowak.net. That's mikenowak.net for links, photos, and commentary.